Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frake here with the Gooder Podcast, where I talk with the powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. Today, I have with me Dr. Jeremy Weiss, not a woman, but a good partner and friend of mine here from Rise 25, who has done thousands of interviews with successful CEOs and CPG companies. And we're flipping the script today where he's going to be interviewing me-ish. We're going to talk about some fun stuff.
I'm excited. And this is going to be, Dan, first of all, thanks for having me. This is going to be the year in review episode. And this is, I love these because we get to hear the great guests, some of the great guests you've had on, some of the lessons learned, and we get to hear your thoughts on it because you're always interviewing people. So, and before we dig into this, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo, and Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm, and they help build beloved and dominant brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness and CPG industries. You know, I know I listen to your podcast, Diana, and you help anywhere from PepsiCo to Starbucks, but you also help startups like Hikee, which by the way, when I was in Costco, I saw Hikee and I thought, oh, Diana and everyone in between, right? They guide mission-driven consumer brands to attract a broad and passionate fan base. I know Diana looks young, but they've been doing this for decades and decades.
Yeah.
And
since
over 30 years.
42.
Exactly. And so if you want to give your brand an unfair advantage, I'm biased, but you should go to Retail Voodoo. I don't care. I mean, you should listen to the podcast regardless, but retail-voodoo.com. It's V-O-O-D-O-O.com or email info@retail-voodoo.com to learn more. And so we're going to dig in. Dan, I'm excited. Okay.
Hey, great.
And if
you.
You're watching the video, you're seeing we're looking at the Gooder Podcast page here, and you can go to retail-voodoo.com/Gooder-podcast. And the first guest we're going to talk about is Maisie. Maisie, adapting and evolving as a leader in the food and beverage industry. And I love to hear your thoughts. What stuck out for you with Maisie?
Yeah. Maisie was a really fun interview. I'm trying to remember who recommended me to her. It'll come to me here in just a moment. She was such a great person to talk to. First of all, she works over at Jones Soda, which
I love Jones Soda.
Yeah. And those people that live here in the Northwest have, you know, Jones Soda's little darling brand that's just kind of grown a cult following and is really growing. But in the last, when I interviewed her, we talked about how she had to basically shoestring a budget during the pandemic and lead the company, not just through the pandemic, but also she was charged with growing the business. And we talked about supply chain issues. We talked about having financial resources capped because the company at a senior leadership level was a little bit hesitant to kind of overcommit on spending new monies against budgets. And so she needed to get really crafty with how best to find her target audience, how best to find resources, all at the same time as kind of figuring out where am I going to help my company find bottles because there was a supply chain issue, just getting the, you know, the packaging into the United States so that they could fill it. So really great story of leading with tenacity through a really challenging conversation. And then some really amazing things have happened this year subsequently because of her hard work and some really significant growth they've added to staff, but they're getting some traction and seeing some velocity in marketplaces that has been really exciting to watch. So really great leadership, good, really good vibe, just really easy to talk with. And she could have been burned out. I think all of us have some level of burnout, but she just felt like she got this. She's got this. Yeah. And having come from Starbucks, her, you know, she had came from a really big system and she was able to pivot, which is very difficult, as we have seen. Sometimes when you come from a really large CPG system and you come into something darling and small, you don't have the redundancies to be able to support you. And she just fell right in and was able to make some really big impacts.
I love it. And, you know, I feel like it should be a requirement for your show, Diana, that people should send you the product so you can drink it on it. Or, I mean, I would do it just for the food and samples, but drink it, eat it.
Yes.
Don't they have like really colorful, like sodas? I don't even know what flavors. I don't know if you have a favorite flavor. I just know the
They're known for a couple of three things. First of all, they're in Seattle, what they were known as, they were the first kind of like with the whole concept of customized labeling, where they were changing the labels and people would send in pictures and you could have your picture end up being on a label. Mm. So, and then they started really getting clever with some of their flavor profiles a few years ago. It could be a while ago now, where they came out like with the Thanksgiving Day set where you could have like turkey soda and stuffing soda. And it was, and people just loved it. Like they loved it, not sustainable for growth. And so of course they had to make some decisions, as you all, you know, as all companies do, where you kind of look at your 80-20 rule and kind of go, how are we going to grow this? And how do we loop seasonal in here? So it's a little bit more sustainable as a business. But that, at least to the people in the Northwest that have been with Jones Soda since the very beginning, that's where Jones Soda kind of lives in our hearts. And it was why I was just really excited to meet somebody who was in there helping steer the ship.
That's cool. Yeah. Someone in a conference room was like, I know how to grow the company. Let's do turkey soda. I'm like, no, not so much.
And yet that's what I remember.
It's a novelty. Yeah, totally. It's a novelty. I get it for someone for like a gag gift. So that was great. Let's go to the next one here. Yeah. We have Sashi. Yeah. So pioneering the new tea culture in America. What stuck out for you with Sashi?
So Sashi and I had this really amazing conversation where we had kind of an aha moment during when we were preparing for the podcast, not even in the podcast. I always like to have a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes with each of my guests beforehand, find out what's important to them, make sure that I'm presenting them in a way that makes them feel like they're presenting themselves in the best light, talk about things that are important to them. And we had kind of this moment where she was talking about her tea, the way she manufactures her tea, the format where it's bagless, but it dissolves instead of,
really,
you know, yeah, it's cool. It's really cool. And she started experimenting with some of the flavors, and her approach was to kind of, modernize tea and make it more youthful. And what we started talking about was like, well, where does tea culture come from? Oh, tea culture comes from Great Britain and from Asia. And both are very serious about their tea. And the culture that's the tea culture in the US is still predominantly that of a European. And so it was like this concept of like, it was colonialization. Tea is colonialized. Like when you think of tea coming from India, and the history of bringing that all in, having that conversation with Sashi was a moment in time for both of us to go, oh, we're drinking tea like they did 200 years ago, 300 years ago, 500 years ago. And some of that is great, but when you're talking about trying to bring in a new audience, that doesn't stick. And so she's created this movement, as you can see here on the screen. She's really, really bringing tea into a modern place. And the reason why I personally believe that it's working is she did send me some samples. Sashi was one of those people that did send me samples before the call. And then since then we've ordered some more, and my daughter, who's 13, was all over it. She's hoarded the whole batch. Mm. And she, and I'm a huge tea drinker. And so this is my daughter's version of tea. And so she and I drink tea together. And now my daughter has this habit that she shares with her mom, and we're having a bonding moment. And I'm like you can see there's a Hello Kitty option on there, which I was talking to her about when I went to Nosh Live a couple of weeks ago. It's like, that's really awesome. So I think she's really onto something, and she's fearless, and she's willing to fight for it. And when it comes to the brand component, she's not fussy about it. She knows what she wants, and she doesn't mess with it. And I think that's really important from a branding perspective. Even if it's wrong, you want to hang on to it until you know that you're going to be making the right kind of changes. And what I frequently see with some younger brands, which I would say Tea Drops is a younger brand in the grand scheme of the world. I mean, they've been around for a few years, but when you think of the ones that are most established, you know, you think of like, I'll just say, I know some of the General Mills, like Kashi as a brand, like they made a big move and then they leave it alone for a little while. And then they make a move, even if it's it doesn't seem like a big move to the average consumer, they make another big move and then they sit on it for a while. Like they give it time to simmer. They give it time to do the work that they need to do. And I really feel like Sashi's got that. Like she's like going, I'm going to let this simmer before I know what the next big move is. And that way she's spending her time as an entrepreneur in running the company and not fussing with the things that don't really need fussing with.
Love it. Love it. So check out that tea. Next one, Danielle.
Danielle.
So Leaders, Brands, Hawaiian Value with Danielle. What stuck out for you with Danielle?
So with Danielle, what I was really impressed by is she's working for Mauna Loa. Of course, it's a Hawaiian brand. She herself has roots in the Hawaiian culture. And we talked about the development of a brand that has a legacy and a culture that's been kitschified, right? Like all of us with, and when we think of Hawaiian brands have like our standard, it's got a big old flower and it's got a tiki and it's got a this and it's got a that. And the Hawaiian culture is so much deeper than that. It's so much deeper than that. And how do you get the attention of the mainland consumer or an international audience while preserving and being respectful to a culture, right? Regardless of whether it's Hawaiian or not, how do you evolve and move it so that the genesis, the foundational elements of the brand are, so you can see just this, the Happy Holidays packaging is just quite so lovely. Like it is not trope, for lack of a better description. Like it's expected and yet pleasant. It's not that what you would call your standard issue Hawaiian design language, Hawaiian gift design language. And so we talked about how, and this is the way we build brands as well. So Danielle and I were really connecting here. Is when you're building a brand, it's really not about the design expression in and of itself if you don't really know what your brand stands for. And she, when she came in as brought into Mauna Loa, she was responsible for making sure that the brand was embedded in the business at the most basic level, at the warehouse, at the front desk, at the people that were packaging it. And then the expression, the packaging, the marketing, the website became such an easy translation, right? Mm. That's all what brand positioning is about. So really connected with her about that and the respect and the respect of the culture and how to do it right, in my opinion. This is how you are respectful to a culture and make a really powerful CPG brand.
I love it. Yeah, this is fantastic. And this is making me hungry. I think you should make it a requirement to give you the snack. I want you to include that when someone signs up to be a guest, like here's my address.
Here's my address. Ship said totally. Package. Many of my guests do that. For example, somebody that I had on Owl's Brew recently, her name escapes me at the time, but she sent me a little care package ahead of time and shared it with everybody in the studio. And that was really great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Miyoko. So mentoring the next generation of leadership, Miyoko, what sticks out for you with Miyoko?
Okay. Well, it would be, I would be shocked if anybody in the industry did not have mad respect for Miyoko. Personally, she's not somebody that, and I would be surprised if people in food and beverage industry didn't know who Miyoko was, particularly in the better for you space. First of all, she is formerly a chef. She transitioned her skills into making vegan products because she saw a lack of those products in the marketplace. But what makes her and her company and her brand's products so credible is her absolute dogged passion for animal welfare and rights. Like, she is a prime example of walking the walk. She has let's see here. They show it, her Rancho Compasión, which is where she basically adopts neglected and exploited, abused farm animals, and they get to live their life out on the land. And you will see her out on LinkedIn actively articulating, actively pursuing her POV about animal welfare and rights, especially when it comes to mass production of meat and farming. And she would like everybody to be vegan, and that's not going to happen. But because she's so articulate about her passion and why, you can see that she's moving the needle in this way. Like, this whole concept of people being flexitarian, there are people who were like, I want a hamburger, but you can't make me go from, you know, meat 7 days a week to no meat, but I will go plant-based 1 day a week. And now I'll go plant-based 2 days a week. And that, at the end of the day, making those incremental movements is, I think, how we're going to make change in anything. So I love that. And then I also love the fact that she walks the walk, in that she coaches other business leaders, other women, other entrepreneurs that are wanting to gain a foothold in this industry. And she does that because she also sees that there's lack of senior leadership in the CPG industry from women and diversity in general. It's still predominantly Caucasian, older male, cisgender. And she and I are on the same page about, we can't represent the culture of the United States and be so homogenized in our leadership. So I love that consistency and her passion.
I love that. And I have a question. Alyssa is one of the resources, is the Plant-Based Foods Association.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a second. So these are all different plant-based foods that are kind of collaborating.
Yeah. I mean, as the naturals industry has grown, I would say the plant-based diet went from the plant-based diet has gone from a trend to a macro trend to it's basically mainstream, this concept of flexitarian.
Yeah, totally.
And it's only really happened over the last 4 or 5 years, the acceleration of it. Who did I interview earlier from 8 Track Foods, Maggie from 8 Track Foods, where she was like in the room where people were saying, how do we turn this concept of vegan food into something that mainstream consumers would want to participate in? And it was calling it plant-based diet. Like, there was a group of people that said, let's lean into this concept of calling it a plant-based diet, which moved from vegan, which has a political and ideological componentry attached to the diet, to plant-based diet, which is not. I mean, it's got this concept of ecological betterment. Like, we want people to eat more plants because not only is it healthy for you, but it's good for the planet. But it moves it away from vegan, which was sort of a swear word for those that were not vegan for a long time. It's starting to soften up now as we've got this concept of plant-based diet. It's like there's a little bit more meeting in the middle now, and it's not so divisive. But we still meet people who are like vegan, who God bless them. I am not that person, but I completely respect the fact that when somebody says they're committing to animal welfare rights, they mean it to down to the products that they put on their body and the clothing that they, wear, the products that they have in their home, down to what they eat. Like, I get it.
That's fantastic. I'm going to have to check out those products too, by the way. And so the next one, we have Cynthia. Cynthia, the evolution, the natural products industry. What stuck out for you with Cynthia?
So Cynthia is another founder of Lily's Sweets. Now
another one that I love.
Yeah. And just a recent acquisition from earlier this year here in 2021 from Hershey's.
Wow.
What I loved about her was she's had, she has an incredible journey. She doesn't wear her age at all. You wouldn't believe by looking at this headshot that this woman started a co-op in the late 70s.
Wow.
No experience in the food, no experience in the retail industry. And she just felt passionate about, I think there was, if I remember correctly, there's family members somehow involved in naturals. But what I loved about it was that she's kind of like, I'm going to say one of the godmothers of the naturals industry. Like she was in the 70s. This was like,
I mean, stevia, it looks like, I don't know, this is when she implemented stevia in 2008, but I mean, no one probably even at that point, most people didn't even know what stevia was at that time.
No. In the early 2000s is really when Lily started to get a real solid foothold. And she had another interesting story. If you listen to her podcast, her episode, what was great was she talked about being at, I don't remember what the trade show was. It was a conference or a trade show. It may have even been Natural Products Expo in the early 2000s. Where she was in a room with a bunch of retailers and Whole Foods had said something to the effect of either Whole Foods had said something or it was alluded to that Whole Foods was going to grow through acquisition. Like that was like the, that was like the flag had been sent up in the air. Natural Foods is still pretty young at that time. And she tells the story of being in the room when that happened and kind of like what has happened with sugar vilification and sugar and fat and the whole, like such a great and powerful person. And she speaks with such ease. And what was so great about this call or this call, this recording that I had with her was Jane Miller, who is, was the former CEO of Lily's, had worked, had been handpicked by Cynthia Tice, but Jane Miller and I had done an interview, did an interview a year before. And Jane was like, I think Cynthia should be on your show. She's got a completely different story than I do as a founder owner. So it was a really nice kind of,
it's like a compliment.
Yeah. A nice compliment. And then of course I got to meet her at Nosh Live this last couple of weeks ago as well in person. I got to meet an incredible number of women that I interviewed for the Gooder podcast at Nosh Live. They all came and found me. Well, not all of them. There's a couple. I'm coming for you. No, I'm joking. There's a couple that were busy, I know, but there were a number of women that I got to meet live and in person, and that was really beautiful. And Cynthia was one of them.
I'm going to, at the end of this, I want to hear your thoughts on Nosh Live.
Yeah.
Once we get all of these, but that's great. And I was eating a Lily's, I mean, it's probably for baking. I don't know. I was just eating it right out of the package last week. So, you know, and probably my wife yelled at me. I was going to use that for something. I'm like, I'm sorry. I just took it down. They're delicious. The next one is Zelda, the movement of the dietary supplement industry. What was Zelda? What stuck out with you with Zelda?
So what I loved. So a couple of things with Zelda. First of all, she was recommended to me by a woman that I interviewed who, what is her name? She does placement work. Let's see if I remember her
name. I'll see if we put her up on here. Was she recent?
I'm looking. Her name is, there she is. Angela. Mm-hmm. Angela was, yes, she does placement, executive level placement, but for food and beverage industry executives. And she had recommended that I talk with Zelda because in the natural space, or in the supplement space, which I believe Zelda works for New Chapter, if my memory serves me. Yes, New Chapter. There was so much craziness around supplements between 2000 and 2001, and it's only accelerating as people who on either side of the vaccine conversation are looking at supplements as a way to bolster their immunity and help them live healthier and better lives. And so we talked a lot about smaller brands, how smaller brands are able to bring new products into the marketplace, but there are some efficacy, sometimes not always, efficacy, easy for me to say, efficacy issues. There's also claims issues that get really, really tricky. And we just talked about her role at New Chapter is around making sure that, first of all, their products are safe. And how do we do that? How do we do that during a pandemic? How do we do that when there's a supply chain issue? How do we maintain consistency? How do we share the right information, like from a compliance standpoint? How do we make sure that we are not misleading customers? So we talked about labeling. We talked about all of those things that are central to products like supplements, where your brand exists mostly based off of health claims. Every brand has a mission, vision, and values, absolutely. But when it comes to something like supplements have a very specific place in the consumer's life. And there are things that absolutely must happen. And we talked a little bit about sometimes she has to be the bad guy with a marketing team. She has to come and go, you can't say that. We can't say that. That's not in our best interest. The customers are going to find that confusing. And other times where she gets to provide insights to the marketing team and really on other elements, other parts of the organization from an operational standpoint on ways to streamline manufacturing, streamline approvals, FDA expectations, all of those things. She is involved in New Chapter in different ways than many of these other people that I've spoken with that might be founder owners or marketers, where she has insight into marketing, but from a different POV. So it was really great to talk to somebody who was able to talk about marketing, but from a slightly different perspective, kind of like from far more tactical and functional position.
It's needed. I'm sure like people need to be reined in sometimes.
Yes. And she also has this really, her professional journey was really, she worked at Beachbody right before she went to New Chapter, and she'd also worked at Goop. And there were a couple of other places. I was like, you have really worked at some amazing places. And so it was very interesting to go from Goop to Beachbody to New Chapter, which from a personality, like a brand personality, is very different than the West Coast brands. New Chapter is a little bit more established East Coast. And so different kind of culture altogether. So she talked about just a little bit of a whiplash moving from California to the East Coast and that whole perspective as well.
I love it. I wanted to wrap things up a little bit with Nosh Live.
Yeah.
So, and your thoughts, who are some of the interesting people, speakers that you met and your thoughts at Nosh Live? Yeah.
What was my interesting part about Nosh Live? So what I'll say about Nosh Live was the amount of smaller, newer brands that were there, like people that were just on the cusp of tripping over and turning into something big, and all the way down to like, I've got an idea. It was much bigger than say, like an expo, which is a little bit more agnostic across big CPG and the kind of those startup brands. It was really inspirational to see some like Jane Miller, Cynthia Tice, Sashi, and who else was there? Miyoko was there. Like I said, all of these amazing women that we're accepting awards, we're on panels talking about DTC. I think those were really great. And I think it's a really good place to, I would say, to network as a smaller brand. And what I also found very interesting is there was a lot of VC there. There was, I would say, a disproportionate amount. People definitely looking for what's the next trend, because you typically can find them when you're looking at the smaller brands. Those are the ones that are dabbling in the things, because the risk is much easier to handle. I mean, if you're Hershey's, you don't want to try something new unless you're pretty dang confident you're going to be successful at it. So you can see this new innovation coming in there. So there's a lot of VC people checking out what's new, what's the new trends, what brands should I be aware of? So that was kind of fun. I met a couple of brands. Essential Candy is the one that really sticks out to me. As a newer brand, they're direct to consumer right now.
What is it? What were their products?
So Essential Candy is...
Candy.
So here's the thing that I think is amazing about this candy, in that candies were created for, I believe it was created for, the candies were created for a family member, and they're basically a candy infused with essential oils. And these candies were created for somebody in the family that had cancer and had no appetite. And these essential oils would not only, by candy, provide a little bit of a flavor, provide some calories, but depending on the essential oil, would increase appetite. And so it was basically a functional candy. And our team did a taste. We do something in our studio called Taste Test Tuesday, where we bring in four or five products that we find out in the marketplace that we think are interesting. And we literally do a taste test, like you would do a coffee or a wine or whatever. And we would talk about, what do we think about the packaging? What do we think about the brand message? Does the product meet the packaging conversation? Just the whole thing from a brand perspective. But we tried the essential candy and it was mixed. It was definitely mixed, because essential oils and candy is definitely a certain thing. And so we were talking back and forth amongst each other. Well, that would probably work for somebody who has cancer, because they can't taste as much, so the flavor isn't there. And then we started to go, well, what else could this product be used for? Because we can't help ourselves, and we start kind of building this whole brand ecosystem in our head when we're feeling really excited about something new. So really found that product to be exciting. And Dean is his first name. I don't remember the last name, but had a wonderful conversation with him. Really think that's a very interesting product. And that probably is the most exciting part for me as well. As much as I say everybody's coming in and looking for the new innovation, I like the new innovation too, because I like the thinking, like, how did this thing come into existence? And meeting those people that felt strongly enough about meeting this thing that they went out and made it themselves. Those are the people that I'm so inspired by. Like everybody that we talked about, you know, that we talked about today so far. So, you know, Nosh Live, would I go? You know, what kind of people would I recommend going there? You know, I met some people from Hershey's and Mondelez and some of the investment capital firms and a lot of smaller brands. I think if you're looking for industry insights, learning how to market your brand, if you're a small to mid-sized brand, I think that's a really great place to go. If you're a larger brand, you know a lot of the things that are going on there. If you're going, you're going for networking. You're just going to hang out with your peeps. And there are the Wayne Woos of the world that are there. In fact, Wayne was there as well. And then all of the panelists are there. And so you get to talk with people who've been doing this for a while, as well as the shiny newer brands.
Yeah. Dana, this is fantastic. I appreciate you sharing the lessons learned over the past year, and also obviously Nosh Live. And I encourage everyone to go to the podcast, check out more. You can go to retail-voodoo.com and then go to the podcast and check out the episodes.
Yeah.
So thanks, Diana.
No, thank you. That was a fun recap. Great way to think about this last year.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.